message.
So we can talk in English, right?
Yes, we can.
Which is good for me.
But if you can in Hindi, it's no problem.
I'm getting a break from Hungarian. I'm better in Sanskrit than in Hindi. Because, although my parents would say Hungarian was my mother language because I was born here, but we left when I was 7 years old. So, as far as I'm concerned, my mother language is English. And Hungarian, I do all right, but in my own way. I have my own brand of Hungarian. I make up my own words based on the English. Often I have to think in English, and then I translate it into Hungarian. Bhagavad Gita, which you all know. Srila Prabhupada. It's very interesting. Prabhupada, when he was still a family man, and at that time, by that time, he'd already moved to Mumbai from Allahabad, and he'd written a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And someone stole it. And at that time, that was like back in pre-war days even. So it was all written by hand. So just a handwritten manuscript document. And someone stole it. So that when Prabhupada came to the West in 1965, he began to then again write his commentary on the Gita. And then he was actually, in the beginning, he was typing. He had a typewriter, he was typing. And he actually had also, he'd already had some handwritten manuscripts from then. He must have started again when he was in India. But then he finished it off in the West. And originally, Macmillan was the one who published the book. But for them, they thought that the purports are too long. So it was an edited version. This is our Bhagavad Gita. And Macmillan bought the rights to the edited version for 5 years. So, and it was a different book. It was a blue-colored book, just with a cover of Vishnu on the cover. And that was the book that I first got. That was the first Bhagavad Gita that I also bought. But the unique thing was, in fact, when I first went to get a Bhagavad Gita, I went to the temple. And this was in Montreal, because by then my family had moved to Montreal. And I was going to McGill University. And I went to the temple, and I said, I want a Bhagavad Gita. He said, sorry, we don't have one. I said, look, you're Hare Krishna, you're supposed to have a Bhagavad Gita. He says, but we're all out. He says, what do I do? He says, go to the bookstore. And I went to the bookstore, but there was about 10 different editions of the Bhagavad Gita. Fortunately, although I didn't actually really read, I picked up Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So that's, I had to buy it at the university bookstore. And of course, the Prabhupada's introduction is based on the fact why he calls it Bhagavad Gita as it is. No, it's not just Bhagavad Gita. It's why it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Srila Prabhupada explains that in India there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita. And because really, anyone who's either an acharya in the line or any spiritual teacher, they should give commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita. This is like a minimum. And but often people give their own commentaries, their own versions, what they either think Bhagavad Gita says or what message they want to get across through Bhagavad Gita, through Krishna's words. And so Srila Prabhupada makes the point that, no, if we want to actually understand Bhagavad Gita, then we need to understand Bhagavad Gita as Krishna spoke it. What does Krishna say? And what Krishna says doesn't really need interpretation or reinterpretation, but rather Krishna's statements, just like Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Ivam vivasvate yogam praptavam amavivam vivasvan manave praha manurikshvate bravit. He says, I spoke this same science, Imam vivasvate yogam, I spoke this to Vivasvan, to the sun god. So that means, which according to our Vedic chronology, that means over 200 million years ago, Krishna spoke to Vivasvan. Vivasvan spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku already means mankind that's on this planet. And now I'm speaking the same thing to you. So that Bhagavad Gita is not something new, it's actually an eternal science. It's the eternal science of the soul. And that's what Krishna begins with. He begins with explaining the science of the soul. Komara, Jovara, Jara, Tathadihantara Prapti. The body's always changing. Boyhood, youth, old age, and then you take another body. So this becomes the real basis of the Gita, is, and these are the real subject matter, the time, universe, karma, supreme controller, material energy, what is actually the world. These are the basic topics which are common to all Upanishadic texts. In fact, Gita is sometimes called Gita Upanishad because it's of the nature of a Upanishad text, just like different types of Vedic literature have different methods of presentation. Puranas talk about history, Upanishads talk about philosophy, and generally the philosophy is in the context of a conversation. So just like Bhagavad Gita is also in the context of a conversation. It's a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. And of course, Krishna is encouraging Arjuna that karmani vadikaraste, that he should do his duty, which is that he should fight. It's a pretty controversial thing nowadays when every time we open see the news, and someone else has blown themselves up or is blowing somebody else up in the name of God. Of course, the real text or the context of Bhagavad Gita is not about fighting a war in the name of religion. The purpose of Bhagavad Gita was not because there was someone of one religion who was fighting against someone of another religion. It was basically on the principles of just governance. But in Vedic times, the principles of governance were based on Dharma. And so, therefore, inevitably, Dharma comes in. But it wasn't that the Pandavas were of a different religious conviction than the Kauravas. And the issue wasn't that. The issue was actually who should actually be governing the earth because of the political inclination. Duryodhana's political inclination went in one direction, and Yudhisthira Maharaj's was the other, and then ultimately he is the one who is actually the just and the proper ruler. He was the legal king, and although of course that's the very beginning of the Gita, Arjuna says that I'm just going to go away and become a beggar. which sounds nice. Give up, forget all about the throne. Why get into a whole legal tussle? Why get into a whole war? Why not just let them govern? Hare Krishna. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to see that you're all here.
Yes.
His Excellency is coming also?
No, His Excellency told me he just returned from
Bosnia.
Yes.
So he won't be coming?
Yes. Just traveled for 13 hours by road and just...
I can imagine. He's tired.
When have you ever spoken with him?
This afternoon. With the officer. He was there in the office till 5 at that day.
Everyone has their limits.
Yes,
we should not. Hare Krishna. Don't forget, Janmashtami is on the 28th.
Yes.
Just to let everyone know. Mm-hmm. And then. And in the 3 days before that, which I guess means 25, 26, 27, then we will have Pravachan and doing Parikrama of New Brajadam. Mm-hmm. And then 29th will be Prabhupada's Vyas Puja. So, this is in Krishna Valley.
Yes.
Yeah. So even here in Budapest Temple, then more or less there will be some little program, but because Radha Shamasundu are in Krishna Valley, so therefore the main festival will be over there. And yes, but it was a point of principle that Yudhisthira Maharaj was the legal king, and the gambling match and everything was all a ruse in order to try to cheat Yudhisthira Maharaj from actually his rightful claim. So Krishna's point was of a point of principle that if anyone can cheat someone else out of their government position, what will happen? And that's what we see happens more and more as time goes on, is that people just push other people out of political power, and of course that's what happened, especially during monarchies, is that Aurangzeb would come and would throw his parents in jail and take over. So it's something similar, for instance, to Sita Devi. Why have a war over a woman? But it wasn't just over a woman. For instance, the whole Greek Troy war, that they had just because of this one woman, Helen, all these people have to die. So is this what Ramayana is all about? But really the idea is no, it's about a principle. And the principle is that if someone can come, if a Rakshasa can come, and can steal away someone else's wife, and if that goes unchallenged, then yadyaracharati shesas tattat evitaro janaha syat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Then if this becomes the praman, this becomes the example, lokastad anuvartate, and the whole world will then follow. So, therefore, Ramayana is about a principle. Lord Ramachandra recruited all the monkeys, of course they're not exactly monkeys, vanaras, they're a little different, they're forest dwellers, but they're sort of a higher race, and there was this big war with the Rakshasas, and so many, many people had to die, but for principle it's alright, or for principle it's important, otherwise if you don't maintain principles, then everything goes out the window. So same thing here. The whole war, Kurukshetra war, is about a principle. And unless that principle is being protected, then ultimately anything may happen. But the issue wasn't about religion. So we say a religious war, but it wasn't about one person's religion against another person's religion. But even when they fought, then Shastra says how you're meant to fight. Although, as we see later on in the battle, that sort of went out the window. I think just before, when Gotakaj got killed, somewhere down around the 10th day, because usually the battle means that you start in the morning and you end at night. Sunrise and sunset, and then it's finished. But at a certain point, they started to continue further. And so at both at Kurukshetra War and then as the beginning of Bhagavatam begins, the real dharma or the rules by which Kshatriyas conduct themselves, Brahmins conduct themselves, that became corrupted by the influence of Kali, by Kali Yuga. So Prabhupada called Bhagavad Gita as it is because he wanted that Krishna should be allowed to speak for himself. Krishna doesn't need any interpretation. So, and Krishna says, Mata parataram na anyat. He says, Mata parataram na anyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. He says, there's no truth superior to me. And it's a very clear statement. It's a very expressive statement. It's self-explanatory. So either one accepts Bhagavad Gita as actually the truth, but if we accept Bhagavad Gita as the truth and Krishna's statements are the truth, then when he says Mata Parataram Nanyat, then says there's no truth superior to me. Kinchirasti Dananjaya Maya Sarvam Vidam Pukta Sutre Mani Gana Iva. He says everything is based on me. He gives this very beautiful example, just like pearls are strung on a thread. When you have a necklace of pearls, you don't see the thread, you just see the pearls. No one says, oh, what beautiful thread you have. Everyone says, what beautiful necklace of pearls you have. Everyone's attracted to the pearls. But what keeps the pearls together? It's that the thread, but it's invisible. So similarly, he says, Sutre Mani Gunaiva. He says, just everything rests upon me. So everything in existence rests upon Krishna's potencies. We may not see them, just like we may not see the thread, but we know, well, if there's a necklace, those pearls aren't stuck together by themselves. There's something underneath that keeps it together. Similarly, this whole world, everything is kept together. How? Why does everything function? What is the ultimate, just like the scientists, they're looking for the smallest particle. They figure if they find that smallest particle, now they've got this monstrosity machine going from France all the way through to Switzerland, this big accelerator, to figure out that they're going to find the basic building block of matter, which is a theory that's based on faith. Their faith is that the basic building block is matter. But Krishna says, Kinchidas Maya Sutramivang, he says, I'm the basic building block of matter. It's not matter. Matter doesn't move on its own. Matter is not conscious. Consciousness comes from a higher source. Consciousness comes from life. Consciousness is a symptom of life. It comes from the presence of the soul. So what is that great soul that is actually all-pervasive everywhere and makes everything move and function? So Krishna says, yes, that's him. In the beginning of the 9th chapter also, Krishna says, Maya tatam vidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani. So that I pervade this whole universe by my potency. But when Krishna says things like that, sometimes it's understood that, yes, that means that God is just some all-pervasive energy, and he's everywhere, and he's everything. But, and that's true. But it's only true in one sense, because then Krishna says more. He says, although I'm everywhere and I'm everything, nachamatstani bhutani paschame yogamaishvaram bhuta vrinna cha bhutastoma matvam bhuta bhavana. He says, although I'm everywhere and everything, still I'm different. In other words, he's a person. Just like our Vijay is a person. But he's got a business. Business is going on. How? Through our potencies, through our energies. Everyone has potencies and energies by which they enact and have things going on at a distance. But that doesn't mean that they're everywhere. That just means that their energies are being felt and engineered everywhere, but they are also locally situated as a person. So this idea that God is a person, this has been very much undermined, especially over the last period of time, over the last centuries, by Shankaracharya's teachings. Because Shankaracharya is teaching the philosophy of Mayavad, where ultimately we're talking about a non-qualified non-dualism, oneness, an all-pervading oneness, and that ultimately Brahman, which means Brihatva, is impersonal. But Krishna, and then they say, well, then who is Krishna? So, well, Krishna is a person, he is just some manifestation of this Brahman. But what does Krishna say? He says, avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashritam param bhavam ajanatum mamma bhuta maheshwaram. He says, avajananti mam mudha. He says, those people who are mudha, they think manushim, they think I assume this human form. But they don't know my param bhava. They don't know my higher nature, which is imperishable and eternal. And so what is this energy of God and God? Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? So again, in the 14th chapter of the Gita, then Krishna says very clearly, he says, Brahmano prihi pratishtaham. Amritas yavyayashvata shashvatascha dharmasa kusipkasyai pantikashvata. Brahmano. So this Brahman, we're very familiar with that word. Just like in Upanishads, it says, ekam dvitiya nasti, that ultimately everything is one, the absolute truth is one, and it has no second. So, but who is that ekatvam? So Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishta aham. He says that this Brahman, it pratishta, it is dependent aham, on me. Because it is dependent upon me. Just like earlier he said, sutrimani ganaiva, like pearls are strung on a thread. So the potency is dependent on the potent. Krishna is the supreme potent person. And the potency or energy that pervades this world and which is ultimately the cause of this world, that is Krishna. Like Prabhupada used to say, why is the sky blue? He says, because it's coming from the effulgence, the Brahmajyoti, from Krishna's bodily bodily energy, potency. Krishna's blue, that's why the sky is blue. Krishna's blue. So this potency, this Brahmajyoti, this is actually the effulgence of Krishna's body. That's why Brahma Samhita says that the Brahmajyoti is the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Lord. Everyone has a certain type of effulgence. Nowadays it's very fashionable to see people's aura. And because we generate energy, we generate different types of energies, therefore it's a fact that people actually have an aura. And what is Krishna's aura? So Krishna's aura is this energy, this potency, this achinta shakti, unlimited potency, and it's by that potency which actually is the cause of and which maintains everything, all of material existence. And then, of course, it's also the cause of the spiritual existence, but that spiritual existence is eternal, and this material existence is temporary. Or at least, it's temporary in the sense that bhutva praliyate, is that there's creation and destruction, and creation and destruction, and that cycle goes on and on. And so Krishna, in the end, he concludes. Of course, throughout the Gita, he's talking about sakam karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga. He talks about karma kanda, and he talks about astanga yoga or hatha yoga. Krishna talks about jnana yoga. So he talks about all different types of yoga systems and different types of yogis. He gives them as different types of means for purification, for advancement. But Krishna doesn't necessarily point out that all of them come to the same conclusion. So, for instance, in the sixth chapter, after talking about Ashtanga Yoga, Krishna says, Yoginam Abhisarvesham. He says, of all the yogis, Yoginam Sarvesham means of all types of yogis, Yoginam Abhisarvesham, Madgaten Antaratmanaha, Shradavan Bhajate Yomam. He says, of all the types of those yogis, those who are engaged in my devotion, Shradavan, with great devotion, Bhajate, who are doing bhajan, Same Yukhtatamo Mataha, they are the best. So it's not really an issue of competition between yoga systems or religions, but we see that different yoga systems are meant for purification. And what does the purification lead up to? So, again, Krishna says, bhaktyamam avijanati, that if you ultimately want to know the absolute truth, bhaktyamam, then you can only know through bhakti. Similarly, in the 11th chapter, Krishna is concluding the 11th chapter, and he says wonderful things, because he's shown this universal form to Arjuna, and then Arjuna sees Krishna's universal form, and he's a little bewildered. Going?
Yes, I have to catch a train in this 7:30.
Oh.
I wanted to sit here. Another time,
I... Janmashtami?
Yes.
So we'll see you there at the farm? Thank you so much for coming down. That's why we packed a little prasad. Hare Krishna. When Arjuna, he saw this universal form, and he was ultimately became very very bewildered by it. It was too much. It was too awesome. It was too frightening. There was too much going on. And so, ultimately, Arjuna said, let me see your original form. So Krishna says, you have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of mine. Now let it be finished, my devotee. Be free again from all disturbance. With a peaceful mind, you can now see the form you desire. Then, Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real forearm form. So from the universal form, then he saw the forearm form. And at last showed his two-armed form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna. Then, when Arjuna saw Krishna's two-armed form, then he says, oh, now I feel very peaceful, I feel very happy. And Krishna says, Sudur durshamidam rupam drishtavana sujanmama devapyasarupasya nityam darshana kankshana. He says, my dear Arjuna, this form you are seeing is very difficult to behold. Even the demigods are ever seeing the opportunity to see this form, which is so dear. Naham vedar, na tapaser, na danena, na chayajaya, shakya evam vidu drashtum drishtavan ashimam jata. The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing superior penances, or by charity, nor by worship. it's not by these means that one can see me as I am. So, of course, then the natural question is, if you can't see Krishna with all these things, how do you see Krishna? He says, bhakta ananyaya sakya aham eva viduvarjana gyatum drashtum chitatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding.